Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In the mood to listen to some geeky conversations? Feel like the internet isn't the best place for an in-depth, respectful exchange of ideas? Then head on down to the 42cast. It's a weekly show that covers a new geeky topic in comics, TV, movies, literature, or video games every week. We can be informative.
Back in my day, kids, Pluto was a planet, so it's gonna stay a planet.
Irreverent.
You learn so much from the X-Men. I mean, really. That Wolverine is the most important character no matter what.
Strange.
It's like, you know, Grodd if he went into theology or something.
Right?
Or controversial.
I believe, and I will swear to my dying day, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe began with Howard the Duck.
Find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, 42cast.com, or ESOpodcast.com. It's the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
Hello, and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back to give you my review of Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson. So if you know this movie, this is a sort of a remake of the anime, which came out in 1995. Which in turn was based on a manga that came out in 1989 by the same name. So, in this podcast, I'm going to give you my thoughts about the movie, box office results, and the whitewashing controversy. So, yes, spoilers will be had. Let me begin with the description about the manga. So, in case you're not familiar with Ghost in the Shell, at least you have an idea. In this cyberpunk iteration of a possible future, computer technology has advanced to the point that many members of the public possesses cyber brains, technology that allows them to interface their biological brain with various networks. The level of cyberation varies from simple minimal interfaces to almost complete replacement of the brain with cybernetic parts in cases of severe trauma. This is also can be combined with various levels of prosthesis, with a fully prosthetic body enabling a person to become a cyborg. The heroine of Ghost in the Shell, Major Motoko Kusanagi, is such a cyborg, having a terrible accident befall her as a young child that ultimately required to have the full use of a full body prosthetic to house her cyber brain. So, that's, in a nutshell, what the manga is about. So, with the movie, again, there's slight little changes, but here, I'm going to read you a quick excerpt. So, in the near future, the vast majority of humans are augmented with cybernetics, enhancing various traits like vision, strength, and intelligence. Hanka Robotics, the world's leading developer of augmented technology, establishes a secret project to develop a mechanical body, or shell, that can integrate a human brain rather than an AI. A young woman named Mira Killian, the sole survivor of a cyber terrorist attack, is chosen as the test subject after her body is apparently destroyed beyond repair. Over the objections of her designer, Dr. Ule, Hanka CEO Cutter decides to train Killian as a counter-terrorism operative. So there are elements from the movie which takes some pieces from the manga, and it does slightly change. So, it works on some levels, and I'll go into that in more details. But I want to play this clip because when I was watching this movie, it reminded me of something else that I love. So, listen to this.
I realized I stopped caring about the people in the movie. I was interested mostly in the special effects. It's a great movie to look at, but a hard one to care about. I didn't appreciate the predictable story, the standard characters, the cliffhanging cliches.
I agree with part of your review. Predictable, cliches.
What about the special effects?
Dazzling for the first 20 minutes, and then what? I mean, the story goes no place as far as I'm concerned. I invested a lot of energy in this movie watching it because it was so striking looking. And Harrison Ford is an attractive actor, and he does take us through any adventure that he's in. But I'm sitting there halfway through the picture saying, where is this going? And when it's over, I think I've wasted my time.
All right, so if you were able to guess what the movie was, and you said Blade Runner, well, then you are 100% correct. When I saw Ghost, visually, I was in awe of what I saw. And I watched this in 3D, and I think I benefited even more watching this in 3D and what they presented on the screen. So it had every essence of that feeling of watching Blade Runner back in the old days, the last century of technology, with this new technology and in 3D. I was just blown away by this. Now, the reason why I played the clip for the Blade Runner is that when that movie came out, and you heard Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel not be crazy about this movie. And yet, it is in the top 100 movies from the American Film Institute. 100. In the top 100. That movie did not do anything in the box office, and reviews such as theirs was the reason why it didn't take off at first. So, that's why I played that clip in relation to Ghost in the Shell. Not that it's 100% like Blade Runner. There are very good moments. There are highlights that it reminds me of that movie that I love. So I love those kind of existential type movies that make me think about the human soul and what makes someone human. Those are the kinds of things that I look for. And then when I looked at everything that was presented before me, yes, there are some problems, and they were minor compared to how I felt about the whole movie in general. So I really can't complain at all about not loving this movie, because I really did. Now, one of the things that I saw this connection between Blade Runner and the world of and the Ghost in the Shell was that Blade Runner took place in 2019. And this one took place in 2029. So within a 10-year span, I can almost see this almost being on the exact same universe, more or less. I was thinking that because Los Angeles had really let technology kind of overrun itself, but it became like this dirty, stagnant hell. Whereas the world that we see in Ghost, it is as if new technologies are adding and making that city, that world, beautiful and cleaner, despite the layers upon layers of advertising that you would see. Just like in Blade Runner, it was as if Japan was far superior than what you saw in Los Angeles. So, and I was doing a little research in the sense of the manga, how there was kind of like a third world war, and there was the Americanism Empire, which is the U.S., had lost one of the wars, so things kind of went not their way, and Japan was the one that really moved ahead. So that's where I was just thinking, it kind of works in that sense. I mean, you can also compare the Terrell Corporation with the Hanka Robotics because they had two different philosophies. You know, theirs with Terrell's, you know, more human than human. But it came down to this moment in which, if you remember from Blade Runner, that Terrell was able to implant the replicants with memories and gave them a short lifespan. That's what helped stabilize them. Whereas here, Dr. Ule had talked about relying on memories is not what makes us who we are, but by our actions. So because of the storyline, again, this is all spoilers, what we find out about who Mira is that that's not her. She is really Motoko Kusanagi. And her character is that she was abducted because they needed her as to be an experiment. She was a disposable teenager, as well as others. So they captured her, they took out her brain, put her into a cybernetic or cyber body. So, and they gave her this new identity of Mira Killian. So that's where you get this whole problem of the whitewashing thing. So why is it that she's Asian in the comic or the manga and in the anime, but she's going to be white in the movie? Again, context of the movie makes the difference. What had happened was that right from the very beginning, you see Asian and non-Asian characters, male and female. A whole lot of shades of white and a whole lot of shades of black. So it makes kind of no difference that she is white and female and not Asian. Considering that they were hiding the fact that her real identity was Motoko, it made sense to make up a story, give her her new name, give her a new identity, and make her completely different from the life she knew before. In the course of the story, she started to experience glitches. And those glitches were her from her past life. So that's why if you look at the context of the story, and Dr. Ule was saying about not relying on your memories, she was actually working towards recovering who she was with her actions. So this is where that controversy about the whitewashing really doesn't work here. I understand the initial reaction, and I'm just as guilty as that, but just like in The Great Wall with Matt Damon, he wasn't the white hero. He wasn't the savior that saved, you know, the native people. That was not the case. But in the context of the story, he was from the West. The people he encountered were from the East. He was on a mission to seek for gunpowder. But he was not the savior. He helped them fight, you know, the creatures. He was not the one to say, trust me, I know who I to deal with these creatures. I can save you all. That's not the case here. So again, when you look at this movie and in the context of the movie, you're okay with the fact that she's white because of what I just told you. So I know this is not a good thing, and there are issues, and I can go into it at length, and I'll talk about that towards the end of this podcast about the whitewashing thing, but let me just say it then. Again, this movie was fantastic. It worked for me on so many levels, from the direction, the cinematography, the music, the visual effects, everything about this movie. I love Scarlett Johansson. And when you play that clip of Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert and remove Harrison Ford, you can put Scarlett in that place and it will still feel the exact same way about watching Blade Runner. I loved Blade Runner when it first came out, and I loved this movie as yesterday. It works on so many levels for me. So those are the good things about this movie. Yes, there are some bad things, and one notable bad thing that just kind of took me out of this movie. Towards the climax, Mira is going back to a location in which she used to hang out with other runaways. And in the course of this, there was a spider tank that came out to fight her and someone else, the other villain, so to speak, in the movie. So I'm like, really? A robotic spider? So it got me thinking immediately about the story about Kevin Smith and how he met with John Peters when he was planning to write the Superman Lives movie, and how John Peters wanted to have Superman fight a giant spider. And when that didn't happen, you know, the story was that John Peters went on to do the Wild Wild West with Will Smith, and lo and behold, there's that mechanical spider at the end. So that was the first thing that I thought about. I was like, really? Is John Peters attached to this? Because I looked, and he's not. But I just like, that really threw me out of the movie. That made no sense to have a mechanical spider. But after that, I went back into the movie. Okay, so I'm fine with that. Alright, so let me talk about the box office. The budget right now is $110 million. So at twice that amount, and you have the marketing promotion material in there. So I figure that's $210 million. And then domestically for this weekend, only $19 million. So it kind of puts it in third place overall for the weekend box office. Now, it lost out to the boss, the Boss Baby, which was number one, which bumped Beauty and the Beast down to number two, but it's been out in theaters for quite some time and had huge numbers. So internationally, Ghost may still pull ahead because of the fact of Scarlet being well-known domestically and internationally. So again, just because you figure, well, I am part of this movie and you're relying on a white actress to do a box office draw, that's one thing. But in the context of the story, it also makes sense. So it's not as if she is pretending to be someone else and forgetting the fact that she was Asian. So that's what I'm going to say about that. So let's go back to the whole controversy thing with the whitewashing. I've talked about this before. The years ago when I lived in New York, I remember the controversy on Broadway. And I think it was Madam Butterfly, in which they were casting white actors in Asian roles and not Asians in Asian roles. To me back then, it was as if to say, if you're an actor, you cannot play anyone but your physical look. If you're white, you're a man, that's who you would only play. But as an actor, you have to play anything. Playing a female, that's opposite of your gender. Playing someone who is of a different race, that's opposite of you. Playing an inanimate object. You know, if you get the role of a rock, and you get to play a rock, you're a rock. Act like you're a rock. It makes no difference if you're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, doesn't make a difference. Make me believe that you're a rock. That's what an actor does. Now, on the same token, if you're hiring someone who is white because it's a more, I'm not going to say this in a bad way, but if you're looking to, if you think that Asian characters or Asian actors are not going to be a draw to a production, so you figure, let me cast a white actor that has more of a name as a draw, and then they'll make him look Asian, then that's kind of what whitewashing in that sense. But again, you look at acting, there were many times in which women were not allowed to go on stage. Men did all the roles. Men and women. So, in the context, again, as I mentioned before, of this movie, I cannot fault the director, I cannot fault Scarlett for doing this movie. There is not this is not a whitewashing issue whatsoever. Even the producer of the manga has no problem watching her perform that role. He was impressed by what he saw. I was impressed by what I saw. So I think the whole knee-jerk reaction has to stop. You can have objections before you have a movie, but the fact that this became an issue before the movie came out, I think that is what is hurting the box office right now. But I think internationally, this movie should be okay. Do I think it should have a sequel? By all means, I would love to have a sequel. In fact, watching this movie, and I'll talk about this in 2 seconds, I will be watching the Ghost in the Shell anime, because I'm doing a Versus podcast come May. I'm going to compare this new movie versus the anime movie. So that's, again, the second week in May. But I thought and I felt this movie was a prequel to the anime movie. I could be wrong when I watched this movie. But nonetheless, this is a movie that it is beautiful to watch. You will be entertained. This is not the whitewashing that I had issues with, like with Danny Rand in Iron Fist, the Netflix series. That's a problem. Because him spouting all the different Asian quotes made no sense for him to spout that when you had a perfectly good Asian woman, as if it was new to her about what he was saying. It did not make sense to me to cast Danny Rand being that white. But now that I know the story, it doesn't work to me at all. But in this case, it does work. Again, the original character is Asian. But in the context, they hid her identity in a cyber body that made her completely different from the original. So, in that sense, they addressed the issue and they executed it perfectly. So, there is no issue regarding that. So, is it something that I want to see again? Hell yeah. I want to see this again. I will own this when it comes out on Blu-ray. Hell, I'll be nice enough and maybe I'll actually get this in 3D. It is that damn good. And it's not because it's like, you know, stuff is throwing at my screen, whatever. It was just that world that they created was so beautiful and it was gorgeous. And it's not that far from what we're doing right now with augmented reality. But the depth that you would see is amazing. So things like that, plus the story, I was just captivated all the way through. And the very last thing you hear, the music from the original Ghost in the Shell, that almost brought a tear to my eye, how it all tied in together. That was truly amazing. So the score to this movie is still unannounced as to when that will happen, but the music inspired by this movie is out. So you do hear the initial Ghost in the Shell theme, but it's been remixed. So that's what you hear it at, heard at the beginning, and now what you're going to hear at the end. And it's still fantastic. So for all those people who said this movie is not worth it, or you had problems with it, look towards Blade Runner. Make your own decision. Watch the movie in the context to understand what is being said about the movie. Put all that crap aside and just go watch this movie. Period. Alright. So, I can beat this to death. I don't. I said my piece. All I know is that I love this movie. Go watch it. All right, so that does it for my review of Ghost in the Shell. Don't forget, you can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. Find me on the various social networks. So let me know what your thoughts are. If you saw Ghost in the Shell, am I out of line? Is the comparison to Blade Runner ridiculous? Please share that with me. Let me know. So, again, thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi, from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.